Yes, she is. Joss Stone, she is some kind of wonderful. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. I will be back later tonight, really, on Saturday night. And author, researcher Steve Quayle will talk about the missing gold. Is there any gold left in Fort Knox? And is the demise of the U.S. dollar nigh? Is it at hand? And what will it be replaced by? If the United States loses its world reserve currency status, we'll get into all of that and much more with Steve Quayle, and then we'll also talk about survival. We will get into some open lines when we come back, so bring your A material. Looking forward to that immensely. Richard Serrett here on Coast to Coast. Stay with us. All right, let's get into it. Open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's begin with the wild card line. Jimmy is in Hawaii, the great state of Hawaii. Jimmy, welcome.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha to you.
Yes, and I'm excited about your show, Tara. I applaud this research because I had a spontaneous healing from cancer 17 years ago, which led me, knowing nothing about energy forces and stuff like this, which led me to learn this form of medical Qigong from China, which is number one today, that uses intention. And it's number one health Qigong in China today and required to be used. And my personal opinion is if the general people are practicing this, it's changing the world in a good
tell
way.
Me about, tell me a little bit more about your spontaneous healing. This happened 17 years ago. First of all, what kind of cancer was it?
I had advanced breast cancer with a tumor the size of an orange and lymph nodes, 21 out of 23 positive in my right breast.
So would that be considered stage 4, stage 5?
Stage 3, taking it to stage 4 because it was in the lymph nodes.
All right. And the circumstances, explain the circumstances surrounding this spontaneous healing.
Well, it's interesting. I found out later I've become a Qigong master, and I found out from this why that happened, because it's tied in with your machine. We don't need a machine. We are the machine. We can make it happen without a machine. And that's what I do every day here, every week, with healing circles in Hawaii, and tumors disappear. But in
your case, were you surrounded by people who were praying or giving you positive reinforcement? How did it work?
Well, that's a very good question. Group force praying really helps. I was on 6 prayer lines, and what happened was I was dying from medical error, so many medical errors. My immune system was down to 0. They said they couldn't measure below 50. They assumed it was dead 0, and this particular protocol I was doing was very, very risky. It was new and called stem cell rescue. And so they wanted me to try it because it didn't do well in the others. Anyway, so the whole thing was a mess. I mean, I was amazing. I lived just from the medical error that happened to me. So they came to me and said, well, you've lost 2 pints of blood plus all these other things from medical error, and so you may have 2 months to live. You know, it'd be amazing if you came back in 2 months from this. So they said I had to be isolated. If I scratched my face, I would die because I had no immune system to protect me. So I went into my room, and I thought, well, I'll just wash. So I went and I looked in the mirror. And I'd been happy up to that point because I had a feeling I wasn't going to die, and I didn't know why. I wasn't through yet. But I looked in the mirror, and I saw concentration camp. I saw abuse. And the brain, I found out later, doesn't know the difference. You can ask any brain doctor between what it remembers and what it sees. And this is why visualization works in healing. And I looked in the mirror, and I saw abuse. And it clicked from that picture of me, like 85 years old, to my 2-month-old memory that was buried in my cells, the trauma that was creating the cancer, my anger and my fear. My mother was mentally ill, and I don't blame her. It's all healed now. But she was throwing me around at 2 months old, okay? And when you're 2 months old, you have no way to help yourself. You're dependent on that parent for life. And so when you're being thrown around and you're 2 months old, you think you're going to be killed by that parent. So I felt I had no value at all in the eyes of that parent, and that my life was not valuable, that was the underlying thing, and the fear and the terror is how it came through. And that was buried in my cells. Well, in that moment when I saw that abuse in the image, I felt the terror. It was the buried trauma came up, and I felt it. And because I felt it, that's the key. I felt it. I went, ah, like this. And all of a sudden, it was replaced by love, the love I needed to give to myself, because I had to become my own mother. That is the healing for breast cancer. I had to stop being angry at my mother and projecting it on her and become my own. And in that moment, I did. And everything became normal. The next day, the immune system was normal, 7,700 from 600 to 7,700. And that was my third day there. And there was no trace of cancer at all.
The tumor disappeared?
It disappeared instantly. No, the tumor was already taken out with surgery.
Ah, right, okay.
But the cancer counts in the body, everything right. was gone.
How did your physicians respond?
They were shocked because I found out later, Richard, that this form of chemotherapy, and I know today that chemotherapy does not work. My personal opinion is that it's a form of population control because it sterilizes you. And the fittest will live. And if it worked, it would work every time because all cancers are the same. It doesn't matter where it is in the body, they all act the same. So we would only need one drug.
We're told that there are many different types of cancer, so I don't know.
It doesn't matter. They all act the same. The man who founded this Qigong is a doctor of Chinese and Western medicine. That's what he said. He said all cancers act the same. So if any medicine could cure, and I can't think of any medicine that cures anything in any tradition, we can even cure the common cold. If medicine could cure illness or cancer, wouldn't we need only one drug then if they all act the same? We don't need different ones for different cancers. That's a bunch of baloney. And I found out the chemotherapy drugs I was getting were the same thing they're using for biowarfare in Vietnam. And then I found out the protocol I was doing, only 1 out of 100 lived. 99 died. And they were doing like that out of 100. They were doing that for 5 years. So I had to write my book, and I wrote a book about my experience, which has been out for a few years. But back to the healing, the most important thing, is that, yeah, I've experienced it firsthand, and I know what the basis of it is. And she's right. It's intention. It's opening up the heart. It's 100%, and it's all about opening up. And if you go to YouTube and look at Greg Braden, look up Greg Braden and look for bladder tumor heals in 2 minutes and 40 seconds, bladder tumor gone. He has it on his show, and that is my master that is filming this, and it shows a bladder tumor the size of a tennis ball dissolve and disappear in 2 minutes and 40 seconds with 3 people waving their hands toward the person using, Tara, the intention that you're talking about. And
Jimmy, I appreciate you checking in from Hawaii with that remarkable story, and thank you for sharing. Let's go to the wild card line once again, and Oscar is in Colorado. Good morning, Oscar. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Hey, buddy. I would like to start by just saying you're great, man. You're my new favorite host.
I appreciate that. That's very kind of you. Thank you. Where do you want to take this tonight, this morning?
All right. So I've been waiting to ask you this question only because I know that you're on the skeptical end on a lot of things, and I love the skeptical remarks and questions that you ask. What I would like to bring to your attention and ready to conversate with you is, you know, what's the need? This last caller you just had, you know, remembering thoughts at 2 months old, your cancer disappearing instantly. You know, I don't have anything against people who are religious, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. But my question to you, Richard, is why do you think it's so hard for people to conceive that this is our gift? This is life. You live life once, you make the best of it, and it's over. And I understand that a lot of people, you know, have a hard time because they've had a hard life or they've been abused, and they look up to there's got to be reasoning for this, or there's got to be something better, right? But, you know, I just put it in simple perspective. You know, a dog can be in a good home or it can be raised in a home where it's completely abused, but it doesn't make a difference. The dog lived his life, it's over. The dog never questions, you know, am I going to have another life after this one, that maybe it's better. So, you know, my question to you would be, why? Why is it so hard for people to conceive that this is the gift that God, if there is a God, which I do believe there is, that this is the gift he has given you, and he has given you, you know, lessons for you to make this life the best you can. Why is it so hard for people to conceive that, Richard?
I don't know that it is. I mean, maybe for some people, I believe it's a gift. And so what do you, if I understand what you're saying, Oscar, is we need to accept that the cards that were dealt, and then just deal with it and look at whether it's a good hand or a bad hand. That's the gift we've been given. And, you know, if it's a bad hand, that's our cross that we have to bear, and we've got to go through life and deal with it the best we can. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I understand you want to believe there are, you know, natural powers out there that can help you, you know, with this will of making your life better, then that's okay, because there are supernatural things out there that we can't explain. And I know science is doing the best it can, but it can't explain everything. So I don't hate them for thinking like this. I just have a hard time understanding where they're coming from, because I haven't had the greatest life, but I made something out of that. I grew up in Los Angeles, and I live in Colorado now. I went away from it, and I'm doing a lot better in my life. I grew up very corrupted. Now everything is wonderful in my life. I feel so blessed. I am religious, but I'm not super spiritual. I don't go to church. I believe in a God, but I love the show because it, you know, sparks your brain. But
it sounds to me like you're more spiritual and less religious, rather than the other way around.
Very true.
Yeah, I agree. I just, you know, just because you you go to church doesn't mean that you're a good Christian any more than standing in a garage makes you a car, as the old saying goes. I think that was Winston Churchill. You know, people pray for different reasons, and sometimes we pray and we don't get what we want. That doesn't mean our prayers weren't answered. Maybe that just means the answer was no, it's not for you, not right now. I mean, that's one of the great mysteries, and I couldn't even begin to comprehend the reason why. So I'll just leave it right there as you know, one of those great mysteries. But yet we continue to pray, and sometimes, you know, the answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is no. But I don't think the answer is ever indifference. Appreciate the call in Colorado. Oscar, let's say hi to, is it Tiziana, west of the Rockies in Newcastle, California? Tiziana, good morning.
Good morning, Richard, and good morning, Tara.
Oh, and Tara's no longer with us. She's no longer on the program.
Oh,
she left us, but we'd love to hear what you have to say. Did you have a coincidence or a story relating to the power of intention?
It kind of goes back to what Tara was saying. Well, first of all, I wanted to let you know that I used the power of intention just to get through tonight, because I felt impelled to call. Because about 9 years ago, my son did a similar experiment as Dr. Tiller.
Yes.
For his sixth grade science project, where he tested his hypothesis if the intention could change the pH level of the water.
Oh, really? He did that experiment. How wonderful.
He did. And so I wanted to ask Tara, actually, what year it was that Dr. Tiller started conducting his experiment, because I wonder if we weren't, somehow connected consciously to what he was doing. But the interesting thing about my son's experiment, which, by the way, he won first place in his school and then also entered the San Mateo County Science Fair, is that his readings showed that he had three glasses of water.
Right.
One was the control water that received no intention whatsoever, and the other glass of water received what we call the love intention, the good intention, and the other glass of water received a negative hate intention. So this is where it's a little different than what the experiment that Tara was saying. And I recall
right.
you asking her if, in fact, they had tested negative intention on the water for the pH level.
It almost sounds like your son's experiments were more in line with what Dr. Emoto was doing in Japan, Masaru Emoto, who we lost earlier this year, I believe, or earlier last year. And the power of intention over water crystals.
My son did test the pH level.
Oh, he did, okay.
Surprisingly, he did. He had the little test tubes. So the water, the glass of water that had the negative intention, the pH level dropped considerably. So like if someone were to drink that water, that would be very dangerous. And then the glass of water that had the love intention was a perfect pH level. And then the glass of water that had no intention at all didn't register any changes. So I thought it was so amazing.
That is amazing. That's remarkable.
Yes, and then he went one step further the following year. I guess, I don't know, maybe out of laziness, but he used the same type of experiment, but he changed it a little with testing the electricity of water.
The electrolytes in the water?
Yes.
And what did he find there?
The same as the control, had no change. The loved one had, you know, higher electroconductivity, I understand. But
so your son thought of these experiments independently. He wasn't familiar with Dr. Tiller or Masaru Emoto.
Well, he and I was helping him out. What are we going to do this year? So I kind of came up with this idea, and he followed through with it. And now he's currently studying to be a biomedical engineer, and he's in college. But I just had to share this because it's just amazing that, you know, the other callers that had called before, a few callers ahead said, well, this has not been tested any other place, and they seemed like they were dubious as to the veracity or whether this was a sound experiment. Well, I was compelled to call to say that, you know, this, you know, a lonely young boy did the same kind of experiment, having the same kind of
Well, Tiziana, I'm so glad you checked in from California, and your son sounds like a remarkable young man, and I appreciate you sharing that story with us. Let's say hi. I think we can work Stacy in here if we move quickly in Massachusetts. Hi, Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We're coming up on a break here, so if you could keep it really tight and succinct, I'd appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
No apologies necessary.
Talking about human intention, I do believe in God myself, but I just find it fascinating because, you know, I'm totally blind and I'm 41 years old, and all my life and up to now with circles of friends that I keep, sometimes they treat me like I don't know what I'm talking about. Like if two sighted people are talking, they talk normal, but if they're going to talk to me, they talk down to me like I'm a little baby and I don't understand. And I know what they're saying. I mean, just because they can't see doesn't mean my brain's not working. Or sometimes people get more of a leeway than me. And so I figured, you know, if there's such thing as human intention with that machine, if they got back what they give out, because I try to tell people how I feel and how they treat me, and I always say, if you're not on the receiving end of one's actions, you don't understand how it feels. And sometimes they don't take accountability of what they do to others. But maybe if they got their treatment back, maybe they'll understand more.
Perhaps one would hope that, you know, that they could wisen up a little bit. And, I hope you've got a strong support group among your friends that truly appreciate you for who you are and treat you a little better than some of your other friends, if we can call them friends. I really appreciate you calling in. Thanks, Stacy. More of Open Lines when Coast to Coast continues. Stay with us. My name is Richard Serrett. We could all use a dose of happy right about now, couldn't we? Thanks for that, Mr. Keith Richards. We'll get back to Open Lines in just a few moments. And if you've got a phone line, hold on to it. Gabriel in Puerto Rico, Pat in Florida, Rachel in Indio, California. We'll get to your calls in just a few moments. Just wanted to mention another great story that Sean Latasor, our webmaster tonight, has posted up on coasttocoastam.com. It turns out the planet Mercury may be the sole survivor of a planetary pileup. The inner solar system may once have been a crowded and violent place, and Mercury, its lone survivor. A new model suggests that most young planetary systems start with several close-in rocky planets, which later destroy each other in a cascade of collisions. If forming tightly packed systems of inner planets is easy, there's no reason it shouldn't happen in our solar system, says Catherine Volk at the University of British Columbia in Canada. And if it happened here, it would solve several problems. As astronomers discover more and more planets orbiting the stars, our solar system looks increasingly unusual. While we have four inner rocky planets and four outer gas giants, many other systems have hot Jupiters very close to their star. What's more, observations by NASA's Kepler Space Telescope suggest that between 5 and 10% of planetary systems cram several planets closer to their host star than Mercury is to the Sun. You can read more about that. It's entitled, again, Mercury May Be Sole Survivor of a Planetary Pileup. And that's posted at coasttocoastam.com. Back to open lines in just a few moments here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM Open Lines. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, and you can join the conversation via Twitter, hashtag Richard C2CAM, hashtag Richard, C as in Coast, the number 2, C as in Coast, AM, at Ed Rodnicki writes, sending good intentions to everyone listening. Great show. And then from Mojo Family, I think the power of intention is real and greatly affects our decision making. How do you feel about the power of intention? Or maybe you'd like to weigh in on the science of coincidence. Let's go back to the wildcard line now. Gabriel is in Puerto Rico. Good morning, Gabriel. How are you?
Good. How are you, Richard?
Very well. Thanks for joining us.
I'm calling in because there was one particular thing that your guest Tara said that I keyed into and connected to Buddhism. She was talking about one of Dr. Teller's, or someone asked her about if Dr. Teller had done some research on a particular phenomenon, and she said although he had gotten into it to some degree, he couldn't prove it beyond a doubt or how something had worked, but he knew it worked. He knew it happened. He just couldn't prove how it happened.
Okay.
And that, after having practiced Buddhism for about 12 years, and kind of delving into how that works or what's behind it, I kept running into this same kind of phrase when I talked to people who were more experienced than I was and tried to understand it myself. And that was, Buddhism is, as you understand, is a philosophy. It's not a religion. But there's an aspect of Buddhism that's quite mystical. And a lot of people refer to something called the mystical law. And that is this general sense that, well, we do these things, we chant, we ask for these things happen. We don't know why, but they do. And we don't have to understand why, but we know it happens. And I think science is in the position, and I think it's been in that position for probably a couple decades now. And you keep finding this in reports and studies, where scientists, physicists, are coming back after having done research for several years and saying, we're seeing a lot of the same results in a specific sense that seem to indicate that Buddhists have, more than any religion or group, philosophical group, seem to have answers as to how this stuff works. You know, there's a correlation between what we're finding out and the way they seem to describe how things seem to work, you know, in a universal way. And I'm finding that too. I didn't set out to do that. I pursued my interest in Eastern religions over a course of a couple of decades, and I didn't really take it seriously until I was a little bit past 40. But and I've always been interested in physics and science, but in an amateurish way, not in anything in a serious sense, but I'm starting to see a lot of these things come together, and of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact that science, and a lot of researchers are publishing papers and publishing books that are basically saying the same thing that this philosophy has been saying for a long time, and in a more abstract and, you know, kind of philosophical manner, but It is coming together, and I think science is showing that there is, in fact, a physical, provable way, you know, to explain these things. There are finding proof that this does happen exactly this way.
Oh, I agree. Much of what we categorize as supernatural is simply some phenomena that's awaiting a scientific definition or explanation. I mean, it's out there, and eventually much of what is somewhat disparagingly referred to as, you know, woo-woo or paranormal or supernatural will eventually have some sort of a scientific explanation behind it, and that'll be one less mystery. I really appreciate the call, Gabriel. Thanks for checking in from Puerto Rico. Let's say hi to Pat east of the Rockies in Florida. Hello, Pat. Good morning. Welcome to Coast. Do we still have Pat in Florida? Pat going once. We have lost Pat. All right. Maybe Pat will check in once again. The first-time caller line, it's Rachel in Indio, California. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. I like to speak... I'll tell you my story. My son went into a group home in Nuevo, California. And the president of the group home would have sex with him. They would give him drugs. And she would buy him anything he wanted. And I found out about it. And I got an attorney. And that attorney made me go look for the copy when he was... when it happened, and I took it back to him. Well, anyway, when that happened, he went back to juvenile hall, and he got out when he was 18 years old. And so I went and I picked him up, and then my son was out for like a year, and then they killed him. And he was awarded $1.1 million. Well, after that.
I'm sorry, who was awarded $1.1
million? My son was awarded.
You said he
that.
Was killed. You mean shortly before his death he was awarded?
Yes, he was awarded that. He was murdered. My son was murdered. Anyway, after that, that's when everything happened. From 2001 to 2007, they had me going to mental health. I have never gone. Never gone from 2001 to 2007. I never went. So I went and I got my medical records. They didn't want to give them to me. So I went in 2009 and I asked them for copies of my medical records. And she said, okay. So then my father got sick and I had to go see him. Well, when I came back, my medicals were tampered with. I called that lady at Riverside County that I wanted my medical records. She laughed in my face. The supervisor from mental health over there in Indio, she didn't even want to pick up the phone to talk to me. Now, my son's investigation, they only opened it for 72 hours and they closed the case.
And did they ever catch the person responsible for your son's death?
No, but I'm going to tell you something else. They took four of my grandchildren away. They falsified all my documents, saying that I was crazy beyond belief, and they took them away. I have never seen them again.
What's going on, Rachel? Why is this happening to you, do you think?
Why? Because they wanted to keep the $1.1 million and make me look crazy so they could do what they wanted to do to me. Now, in February of February the 8th of 2008, the psychiatrist that did that, falsified my documents, he didn't have a license anymore. Anyway, I've been investigating and everything. Well, there's a large, I don't know if you want me to say the pharmacy that...
No, I'd rather you didn't, Rachel. Right. No, we don't, it's all right. Okay. It's a large pharmacy.
It is a very large. Anyway, somebody there was paid off to take the drugs. And I never received any drugs. So they were falsifying everything, and they were defrauding the state of California.
Rachel, I'm so sorry to hear about all your problems, and I hope that, I don't know, maybe you can find someone to assist you in further this investigation and get to the bottom of why this is happening to you. And I wish you well in your journey. And it sounds like it's been a very difficult, hellish road for you, and I wish you well. Thank you for that. Let's say hi to Eric, west of the Rockies in Denver. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. How are you doing, sir?
Very well, likewise. Thanks for checking in, Eric. What's on your mind tonight?
I first just wanted to say I was, my prayers are with the young lady that was just on the line. I was really sorry to hear the trials that she's going through and has been going through for a period of time. I wanted to share a couple things with you. I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version. I'm 48 now. When I was, right before I turned 19, I was in a really bad motorcycle accident. And I was in a coma for a long period of time, and I had died multiple times. And they had told my mom that I had a 0% chance to live just because of the brain damage. It was an open head injury, a motorcycle accident. And it was pretty severe. But when I was in a coma, I had what people call an out-of-body experience. I called it an adventure. But I had gone through the process where people say they were in a tunnel and they saw the light and so forth. And I finally, God was in front of me and he was speaking to me. And he gave me a choice to live or die. Now, I don't remember making the choice, but I do remember waking up out of the coma. And when I came out of the coma, I had 100% memory loss. I didn't know family, friends, or anybody. That's where my life started. A lot of very interesting things happened from that point on. I became very empathic, which a lot of the people would call them gifts that I received that I have now, I thought was a curse at the time. And a lot of people say, well, you have to have the faith. And I always feel that I don't have to have faith because, you know, I saw God and he spoke to me. And you talk about coincidences and things that happen. There's another key thing that happened through my whole life. So many incredible things have happened, and coincidences seem to happen, maybe not on a daily basis, but not too far from that. But I had an incident happen to me several years ago where I saw a black crow. I pray a lot, and I prayed for the direction that I was going in, and I was praying for an answer to let me know. In one day's period, I had seen a black crow at three different times at three complete locations that were miles apart from each other. And each time the crow was right outside the window twice, and another, the third time it was outside. Each time it was outside the window, one time I tapped on the window and it just sat there and stared at me.
Sounds like something out of an Edgar Allan Poe story.
It really does. And I really did give you the Reader's Digest version because there's been hundreds of things that have happened to me, and that's no exaggeration. But, you know, it is. There's so much out there more than we know. And as far as believing in God, there's no doubt for me just because of what I've experienced and what I've seen in my life.
Right. Do you attribute these gifts, if we would call them gifts, and I don't know how you feel about these things, but do you attribute these with the brain injury that you sustained? Did it all, do you believe it happened, these gifts happened as a result of that motorcycle accident?
I do believe that. The head injury was so severe, and what I believe it did is opened up some different closed doors in my brain, so to speak, that made me see things that I think that have always been there that I never do. I've seen such a wide array of things, from demons to angels, and, you know, demons are angels, but just, I reckon, a different form. But I truly believe that is the head injury opened up the door. And I think that also something that helps feed it, is that's like the vehicle, the gas that's put into me is my faith. And that keeps me aligned. And the more I'm aligned on walking the path that I'm supposed to be on, the more things I can see.
I appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in, Eric. Let's say hello to John in Knoxville, Tennessee. John, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, sir. How are you?
No, I'm doing good. It is an honor to speak to you. This is really awesome. I think you got a lot of people that's calling in and giving these testimony. And if you don't care, I'd kind of like to tell you a story and make a plug in, if you don't mind, because a lot of what these people are talking about is awesome. I've got a friend, and he called me one day, and he was headed home, and he told me that his house got robbed, and he was headed down to his house, and he told me that he would call me back. Well, he never called me back. The next day, I called him, and I asked him if everything was okay, and he told me, he said, "Man, you're never going to believe what happened." And I said, "Okay, tell me." He said, "I was standing outside." He said, "I walked in, and everything was okay." He said, "There's nothing missing." He said, I walked outside. He said, I had my gun in my pocket. He said, I had my flashlight in my hand. He said, I never even turned my flashlight on. He said, and I seen a light coming from the top of my house. He said, there's nobody there. He said, I turned around. He said, I seen two angels standing on the top of my trailer. He said, whenever I seen them standing there, he said, they were clothed. He said, you could see the armor on them. He said, hair went down to their shoulders. He said, they had armor. He said, it was beautiful. And he said, they were clothed in the glory of God. And the reason I tell you that, man, is because I believe that there's so much power in a testimony like that. And the plug-in I would like to make, if you don't mind real fast, is I'm actually not doing a type of a book, but I'm actually going to do a journal of sorts for people of testimony so that I can put these things in people's hands, because a lot of what people are saying is awesome and very powerful. Down to the healing, to the seeing of angels, to the guy that just called. I mean, all this stuff is awesome. If anybody has a great testimony or a great story, if they could please email me. The email is supernaturaltestimonies@gmail.com. Man, I would appreciate it, and I thank you for your time, Richard.
I appreciate you checking in, John. If I could just ask you this before you go. And why was your friend convinced that these were in fact angels that he saw on the top of his house?
Well, we were raised in religion. Both of us were. We were actually told by God to step outside of religion and kind of take a different approach. A lot of people look at things differently when it comes to certain situations. So we kind of step outside of religion and take a different look at things, the way that the Bible explains it, because if you notice the way the Bible explains it, we really don't do that today. We kind of do what we want to do. So by doing that, like your last caller, it's kind of opened up certain doors for us. And by those doors, what I mean is he has made himself more acceptable to things, to see things, and to be vulnerable to things. This is not the first time he's seen it. There's great testimonies that I have from him and other people, but this is not the first time he's seen it, and it's not going to be the last time he sees it. But God has shown him these angels, and he's also shown him demons. He's shown me demons, and angels and different things like that. And it's just, I mean, you just know when you see them clothed in the glory of God, and you see what they're doing there, and they give you a wink, like, you know, everything's going to be okay, so don't worry about it, that God's got your back, and these angels are messengers. You got cherubim and pharaohim and different kinds of angels that do these things.
Appreciate it, John. And good luck with that book. Sounds like you got a good one there. Mavis Staples wrote a song for everyone, taking us into the break. More open lines when Coast to Coast continues. My name is Richard Serrett. Stay with us.